Hello, it's Friday the 8th of March. I'm Gary Bowerman. On today's show, I'll be discussing the Chinese New Year holiday and the outlook for inbound and domestic travel in China with my guest, Shanghai-based Gerrit Janssen, a consultant for UN tourism and a serial entrepreneur in China. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today is a solemn day in the region as it marks the 10th anniversary since the disappearance on the 8th of March 2014 of Malaysia Airlines flight MH370. The flight was en route from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. It still remains a mystery as to what happened. Our thoughts, of course, are with the families and the loved ones of all 239 passengers and crew on board. Moving on, wherever you look at the moment, the Chinese travel market is a red hot topic. But while outbound tourism grabs all the headlines, domestic travel in China and the government's real shift towards opening up its inbound sector tend to garner less coverage, although I think they will do more so over the coming months. To dive into these key pillars of the Chinese travel ecosystem, I'm delighted to be joined by Gerrit Janssen, consultant in China for United Nations Tourism. So, Gerrit, thanks so much for coming on the Southeast Asia Travel Show. How are you doing? And where are you right now? Because you're on the road, aren't you?
Yes, Gary. Really a pleasure to be here today. I'm in Qingdao at the moment, which is in the northeast of China. And just a couple of days ago, I was still in the southwest in Kunming, which is also where the high-speed train line starts that enters Laos. So I've been traveling quite a bit around the country, which is also related to quite a few things that we'll be discussing today, Gary.
Cool. Okay. So it's good to hear that you're on the road checking out some of the interesting cities in China. You're based in Shanghai. We've had a bit of time to digest really what happened during the Chinese New Year holiday period. A lot of coverage around the world about that. There's the 8-day actual public holiday for Spring Festival and then the overall 40-day travel period. So let's just look at some of the top line figures, Gerrit, and you can tell me if we can read too much into them or whether they are simply just the big figures that we would expect. So during the 8-day public holiday, there were 474 million domestic trips. There were 3.6 million outbound trips, including 2.2 million of those which were to Hong Kong and Macau. And there were 3.23 million visits from overseas destinations. What should we read into those, Yara? What does that show about where we currently are in terms of China's reopening to travel and tourism?
I think, Gary, things are close to what we can be expecting. Domestic trips numbers are going to be high. Which has historically always been the case, but you see some changes in people's behaviors. I remember 2009 when I just moved to China, during Spring Festival, cities were empty because everybody would be going back to their hometowns, spend time with their families. That has changed also because some of their people's families have moved into the cities as well. And some young people, they just want to go travel. However, yeah, not many people are going abroad, not as many people as I imagine many in especially Southeast Asia would have hoped. And inbound is also quite far from seeing any sort of recovery, even with the new visa-free policies that have been announced.
Okay, that sets up quite nicely where we're going to move along with the conversation. Just looking a little bit briefly, because we're not going to talk too much about outbound, but during that period, the Spring Festival, looking at the outbound trips, now 40% of international flight tickets during Chinese New Year were issued for Northeast Asian destinations. So that includes Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, Macau, Taiwan. 28% were to Southeast Asia, 7% to Oceania, and 2% to South Asian destinations. So if you take the Asia Pacific region, that's around 77% of the total outbound visitors. I guess that's what we would probably expect. But Gerrit, let's take a little bit of a look at some of the domestic destinations that were popular. And I guess looking at the list, which comes from Forward Keys, Not too many surprises there. What would you say?
I would say Haikou is a bit surprising because, well, Haikou is in Hainan, which is a tropical island of China in the south. And the top destination generally is Sanya, except this seems to be describing growth. Yes, yeah, so the third in the list is Haikou with 22%. That's the capital city of the island. Now, it generally tends to get less tourists, but I can see that because Sanya is so saturated that it's less likely to see any growth. And Harbin, of course, has been the big trend over the last months with the ice festival, which has been around for a long time, but has seen massive attention and maybe the biggest tourism trends over the winter months. So that's kind of extended into the Chinese New Year, because in the north, I can tell from experience that it's still full on winter, while in places like Kunming in the south, it's over 20 degrees these days. So very different. And Chengdu has generally been seeing a lot of growth in the economy, in tourism. Chengdu is one of the top cities in West China, and probably one of the best developing ones. And of course, they have the pandas, and they have some of the most famous cuisine from China, like Sichuan food, it's called. Chuanzai, we call it in Chinese.
Right. So some of those cities on that list, the top 10 list, you would expect you Beijing, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, Hangzhou, Shanghai, Xi'an as well. But Changsha is an interesting city, isn't it? That's sort of come into its own in recent years. Can you tell us a little bit more about why domestic travelers are seeking out Changsha?
I think Changsha has been fairly popular. Changsha is also quite low cost. One interesting thing is, this is not necessarily directly related to tourism, but for instance, housing prices are very low for a provincial capital. Changsha, again, is also a big one for food. A lot of people like Hunan cuisine, which is the province where Changsha is. Yeah, and I think because of the low cost of Changsha, that may be another thing that could put it higher up in the list.
That segues very nicely about what we're going to talk to next year. We're talking about this value consciousness coming out of the pandemic. We know that the economy in China has gone through some really destabilizing processes after 3 years of being closed internationally. One of the things that we picked out from the domestic travel figures during Spring Festival year is that although overall spending was up, numbers were up, actually the per person spending was still a little bit lower than it was pre-pandemic. Is that just something to be expected at this stage of the recovery?
Yeah, I think this is going to continue for quite a while. People are going to be more conscious of their spending. During big holidays like Spring Festival, people are going to be traveling anyway. Most people will want to take the opportunity because they may not have it during the rest of the year outside of National Day holiday and also the May holiday. So it is an opportunity, but people are going to be more conscious because of the situation in the economy right now. And of course, youth unemployment is also a factor in this, because people are simply less sure that they are going to have a job or that they can change their job. Before the pandemic, job hopping was something that was quite common. Well, you see now people are more planning for stable positions, which generally also tends to be working for the government or working in state-owned enterprises, because these are generally considered to be stable employers.
That's a good point. You referenced one of the noticeable aspects of the economic downturn is this youth unemployment. And I guess what we're talking about, you referenced there that job hopping and finding new job opportunities was relatively easy before the pandemic. But we're talking about a generation of young people, young travelers, who really only during their lifetime known upward curves. They'd only known growth in the economy, growth in the travel economy. Has that had a psychological impact as well as an economic impact?
The psychological impact, I can see that with the people around me. I have a lot of Chinese friends in various age groups. And yes, people are not as optimistic at this moment. And it also depends on where they're living. In bigger cities, people are perhaps a bit more, they see more opportunities because there's just more happening around them, while in smaller cities, which is the, I mean, smaller cities in China can still be mean it's a city of millions, right? But that's just the scale that we're talking about. If I'm talking about a city in the Netherlands, to my Chinese friends, they are always shocked that the biggest city has less than 1 million people. While here, a city of 1 million people is a town. But you see, yeah, there's big differences in the different regions, and psychologically, of course, it's massively gonna affect people because people have do ha tend to have savings. Lots of people have invested in real estate, which is both good and bad at this point in time. But it does mean that people do generally have some savings left, and it's more the psychological effect, I would say.
Yeah, you made a really good point there about the fact that it's different regionally across China. I think one of the things that often gets a little bit forgotten in media coverage is just how big China is and how differentiated the economy is across what is almost a continental-sized country. To that point, Yareth, you travel quite a lot actually to different regions. You were on the road just before Christmas. I think you went to several cities. You're back on the road again now. What are you experiencing in terms of the travel economy, in terms of things like flight and rail ticket prices? How do they compare to pre-pandemic and also to now? Are the airports full? Are the trains full? You know, what are your observations at this point in the recovery?
Yeah, before Christmas, I visited 10 cities, if I remember correctly. And on this trip, I've been traveling to a lot of different places too. So it's a combination of high speed rail, which is generally very convenient, very fast, and some flights because places like Kunming are very far away. It's a 3 hour flight. So yeah, the trends that I'm seeing is, and during major holidays, I can promise you, no matter what the economical situation is like, train stations are going to be packed. It's going to be very difficult to get train tickets. And even during the summer months, to certain destinations, getting train tickets can be very tough. And when I say train tickets, it's generally all bullet trains, high-speed railway.
And when you say
Is that
summer, Jared, that's during the school holidays. Is that what you mean?
exactly, yes. So this means that a lot of parents can take their kids out. Of course, some people are working in education, so they'll have time off. So the summer holidays is also a pretty big one, especially people trying to avoid the heat in a big part of China. Yeah, and then during these holidays, during Chinese New Year, things were very expensive. Flights were expensive. Train tickets are all the same. The prices don't change. It's just about whether you can buy a ticket. And then just after Spring Festival, even the Chunyun, the 1 month holiday period, wasn't over yet. Right after Spring Festival, you see the flights dropping in price. Sometimes even as low as $20, $30 to even quite far away destinations, which is in China is very cheap. I wouldn't say flights in China are particularly expensive, but you never get it's hard to get the deals you can get in Europe, for example.
That's interesting. So we've kind of looked at most of the aspects there that are impacting domestic travel during the Spring Festival. Looking ahead, I think the China Civil Aviation Administration predicts that there will be continue to be an increase in domestic flights this year. I guess we're not going to see the demand for domestic travel dissipate, but we will see, as you said, those seasonable peaks and troughs across the year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's mostly peaking during the few holidays that are there, the bigger holidays around the year and the summer months.
Yeah. And what about hotel prices? Is there any difference in those?
Yeah, hugely. For example, I'm in Qingdao right now. You can get a pretty nice hotel for No, about $50, $60, you can get a nice hotel room downtown. However, during the summer months, it's generally about a three or four fold, depending on what hotel you pick and whether it's the weekend. And during Spring Festival, it's hard to say how high these prices can go. And you see the same in some of the other top destinations. I used to live in Yunnan, so I just came from Yunnan as well. And there's a couple of destinations there that are incredibly famous within China, which is Dali and Lijiang. Yeah, very, very famous travel destinations. And in a couple of these places, especially inside of the old towns there, so there's very famous old towns where people like to go. Inside of these old towns, it can be a difference of $20 and $150 for the same room, depending on whether it's Spring Festival, Golden Week, or just an average day in the year.
Sure, Yunnan, that's a beautiful part of the country. I must try and get back there this year. I haven't been there for a long time. So that wraps up a little bit of what we're going to talk about domestically, Jarrett. But really, inbound travel has taken on a new meaning, really. It didn't really get much coverage before the pandemic. Most of the global interest in terms of Chinese travel and tourism was outbound. There was some interest in what's happening domestically, obviously, because it's such a massive market. And even during the pandemic, it retained its status as the world's second largest air market, purely based on its domestic sector. But inbound travel has become something that's quite interesting because the government has actually shifted its policy stance. If you remember, we can recap what's actually happened over recent months. Back in November, on the 24th of November last year, 2023, China announced almost out of nowhere that it will provide visa-free entry for up to 15 days for citizens from five European countries: France, Germany, Italy, Netherlands, and Spain, and one Asian nation, Malaysia. That scheme is going to run on a year basis as a pilot from it ran from 1st of December last year up to 31st of November 2024. It subsequently added bilateral visa-free access deals with Singapore and Thailand. Brunei was already included on visa-free travel to China. Yesterday, China's formalized a start date of the 14th of March for more European countries, Ireland and Switzerland, Hungary, Austria, Belgium, and Luxembourg, which I think, if my math is correct, brings the list to 15 countries. So that's a lot of statistics. That's a lot of countries, Jarrett. Why is this happening now? What's the rationale behind this move towards pushing inbound tourism much stronger than probably ever before?
This is an incredibly interesting topic, Gary. For us, honestly, even working in the tourism industry in China, this came as a shock as well. When the first countries were announced, now we're just assuming that more will follow throughout the year. What I see in the news the most is that people are talking about how this is going to affect outbound tourism. From my perspective, the number one priority in China is not even to bring tourists in, but is to revitalize the economy. And this is mainly focused, I think, on business travel, on FDI, on foreign direct investment. And of course, tourism in itself can be a soft power method of bringing people close together. And in my experience, when people from different countries and different cultural backgrounds meet, they tend to forget all the superficial things they've been reading in the media, which are generally very one-sided and very, very much biased. So it's of course a good way for China to bring in more people, have more people experience what China's really like, and also bring in more money because the current situation of the economy isn't great. A lot of media have been talking about this. It's not as bad, I think, as international media are describing. But I would say if there's one priority for the country, then this is it. And of course, this opens up a lot of opportunities because inbound tourism has been, you can consider it close to zero over the last years, in the COVID years. And now we finally see an opportunity to hopefully try and get back to pre-COVID numbers.
Yeah, that's an interesting analysis. Yeah, and I totally agree with you. I think, you know, that focus on bringing in more business visitors, MICE visitors, and as you said, inbound investment, which is the ultimate goal, is central to this. One of the interesting factors that I've seen about this really is that offering visa-free access in itself isn't a marketing tool. It's a procedural tool and to try and attract more people to come to a country. But you have to do more than that, don't you? And I think one of the perceptions about China is not just that it's bureaucratic to get in and it's costly. You have to pay a visa fee. And you have to fill out, from personal experience, you have to fill out pages and pages of documentation before you actually submit your application. But there's the other side to it, isn't there? The actual side of traveling in China, and particularly the payment side, which I think, whether it's true or not, has confused a lot of people outside the country, that there is a perception that it's difficult to both travel and pay for items when you're in China. Is that fair?
Yes, that is fair to say. I've lived here for so long that scanning a QR code to pay for everything from dragon fruit on the side of the street to a hotel room to flights to anything you can really imagine, it's normal as breathing for me. But I understand that that's not the case for a lot of people who visit China for the first time. Payments is one thing. There's also a problem of SIM cards, which has been announced that they are trying to solve this. They're trying to make it easier in airports. There's internet access that can be limited. I mean, we've given a lot of feedback as well to departments back in Beijing. And obviously, you know, judging by the visa-free policies that have been announced multiple times up to yesterday, the central government is putting a priority on opening up, on making it easier. So this is the best time for everybody to give their feedback so that we can hopefully make things easier. Because even what I find for international travelers is that train tickets in China can sometimes be more difficult than buying a flight, which is usually the opposite in many countries.
And there's two reasons for that, isn't there, Yareth? One is because the app that you would be using is in Chinese language only. And the other one is that, maybe I'm wrong, but I think to actually buy that ticket is difficult to do so with a foreign passport.
Yeah, there is an English app, but it's all controlled by one company in China, which is China Rail, the state-owned enterprise. And they are not known for giving the best user experience. So what most people will do is buy through trip.com, through the app or the website, which also adds an extra fee on top of buying the ticket. And then, and this is not a big issue for me anymore, but when you enter the railway station, you need to use your passport. And often the machines won't work with passports, so you have to go through the manual channel, and the same goes for finally entering the train. So there's a few steps in this process that, you know, it's quite a lot like buying a flight, except with flights we're more used to the security checks, while with trains in many countries, including the Netherlands, where I'm from, that doesn't exist at all.
Yeah, so that I mean, that's interesting, but let's dig a little bit deeper into what's happening at the institutional level, yeah, because as you know, and I both know, travel and tourism is very policy-driven, very state-driven in China, as it is in Southeast Asia. There is a huge governmental input into this ecosystem. The government wants to attract more international visitors. What's the response? You work with a lot of different governments. You work with a lot of different cities. How are they responding to this? You know, what kind of programs and campaigns are they putting into place?
One trend we were seeing is that last year, they suddenly all had to plan to go overseas and do promotional events to try and get people to come back. And that was in a bit of a rush. Nobody knew that they were or would have to do hold these activities. And of course, especially last year, the budgets were not prepared for China opening up, because things work differently on national level and provincial level. Many budgets are being created the year before So that meant that they were not really prepared for 2023. And this year, probably because of the situation in the economy, and everybody knows that it's the same with companies. Often when times are tough, the first thing that gets cut in a budget is branding and marketing. While possibly you, there's something to say for doing the opposite, right? Because in when times are tough, you need to find ways of revitalizing your situation, your economic situation. So on provincial levels and also city levels, yes, there's a focus on it, but the question is, do they have the means? You know, we do quite a lot of work with governments around China. I've done a training recently for a city near Shanghai, on a city level and also on a district level. And you see that even on a district level, they do have that interest of profiling themselves internationally. But it's really about having that means right now. So there's a bit of a gap between what the national goals are and what can actually be achieved. So indeed, you can, like you said, Gary, you can introduce visa-free travel, but there's a lot of other steps that need to be that we need to take before we really can get to the final goal. And making sure that people know about the new policies and how things are getting easier, that's incredibly important. We may believe that everybody knows about this, but we are in this circle, in this bubble of people that all work in travel and tourism and have an interest in Southeast Asia and have an interest in China. So yeah, around us, maybe everybody knows, but outside of that bubble, the question is, how many of these people can we reach?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's watch this space. I think we'll probably be talking about this for the coming months. And yes, you'll come back on the show hopefully later in the year and talk about progress, because it does seem that China does want more travelers and it is putting in process programs to do that. But as you said, the budgets haven't been there. And also the knowledge base to actually put these into position, probably not either. So there's just a lot of work to be done, I guess.
Absolutely, yes.
So we have a few minutes left, Yeras. And what I wanted to talk about a little bit is about the distribution of travel. I was on the Ctrip 2023 annual earnings call a couple of weeks ago, and there was some interesting, obviously, the numbers are up, they're up on 2022, of course. Some numbers are up on 2019, some are down a little bit. But the one thing that really stood out for me about Ctrip is two things, I guess. One is that it actually stated that it believes that inbound tourism is a big opportunity for the company. Now, Ctrip or Trip.com is really traditionally focused mostly on outbound travel. During the pandemic, it became much more involved in domestic travel simply because it had to. So it's now going to be involved in these three pillars, inbound, outbound, and domestic. And one of the things that it said is that it thought that its own share price was undervalued, and it started buying back some of its shares to try and drive up the share price. That's had some degree of success. The share price is up about 17% as it was a year ago, but you probably expect it to be a little bit higher than that. But let's just sort of, I want to get your thoughts really on the travel distribution market, Yareth, because Ctrip is the most internationalized OTA in China. It's the one everybody knows. There are other ones as well. But as in all consumer sectors, we're seeing a real, real grab of market share from some of these short video apps. What does that mean for the OTAs?
Yeah, you raise a really, really good point here, Gary. There's generally been a shift in the last years from what we already consider as more traditional e-commerce platforms. Some of these traditional e-commerce platforms are maybe just about to become mainstream in the international market. We're talking about Tmall, which is AliExpress in Western countries now. And Pinduoduo in China, which is Temu overseas. So there's especially the video platforms like Douyin, which is the Chinese TikTok, right? It's the same company. It's both belongs to ByteDance. However, TikTok and Douyin are completely separated ecosystems. So we never refer to TikTok for the name of the Chinese version of the app. And this is actually one of the main platforms that is taking big bites out of the e-commerce and e-commerce platforms and the OTAs. There's Meituan as well, as you mentioned, which is what we consider overseas as China, one of China's super apps that does everything. You know, I use Meituan to buy tickets for the movie theater or to get my food deliveries, and sometimes to get bike sharing. So you see, these are all three entirely different things, but they also sell a lot of tourism products. So Meituan is one of them, but Douyin is selling a lot through live streaming. And even friends of mine are running a company that can do over 100 million renminbi a month, just selling hotel rooms. So we already discussed a little bit what the trends are. You know, during Spring Festival, hotel rooms can be very expensive, but outside of that, occupancy may be quite low. And during these times, they still need to try and find ways of selling their rooms. Lowering their prices too much on OTAs could give them a bad image. However, these live streaming platforms, they may offer like special deals during a live stream of a couple of hours, and they can sell huge amounts of rooms or trips, or maybe not so much flights, but definitely other tourism products. And this is also affecting Ctrip. And I think regarding the stock price right now, Ctrip and Trip.com are the same company. But they're actually quite separated in their ecosystem. The apps have a different design. The content's different. Trip.com may borrow content from Ctrip as long as it's translated to English. But Ctrip definitely has a lot more hotels for China, for example. Some of these hotels do not allow foreigners to stay there because they don't have the right system in place, or they don't have approval, or they may have never applied for it. So there's a difference there, and I think the stock price for Trip.com will also be affected by, mostly be affected by how the international market perceives Trip.com, and they may or may not be aware of what the domestic platform Ctrip and related companies are doing. So I think this can also affect how people are actually seeing the company. When I was in Thailand, I saw huge advertising, especially at the airport in Bangkok for Trip.com. But I don't know, honestly, right now how well Trip.com is perceived in the rest of the world, or if people even know about it. Because, Gary, what are most people using in Malaysia to book their flights and hotels? And I don't think it's Trip.com, right?
No, that's a good point. And you're right there that they have actually expanded their international marketing once again. They were on a drive for that just before the pandemic. And as you said, at Suvarnabhumi in Bangkok, they now sponsor all the aircraft passenger bridges at the airport. You see the Trip.com logo absolutely everywhere. Jane Sun, who's the CEO of Ctrip, said during the earnings call that expanding its international business is a key priority. And as you said, Ctrip and Trip.com are separate entities in many, many ways. They operate very differently. And they said that their focus will be on developing the business mostly in Asia Pacific. There's a lot of work to do. And they intend, this was their ambition, for Trip.com to become profitable in the next 3 to 5 years. So there's a lot of work to do. I agree with you. I think it's interesting that pressure on the e-commerce and the social media and the social commerce sector in China is certainly something we'll be watching, not just in travel, but across various sectors over the coming years. Yeah, it was fantastic to talk to you. We're running out of time, but there's so many. Talking to you has raised so many more questions. So hopefully you can come back on the show in a few months and we can delve deeper a little bit into some of these fascinating issues, which will become much more relevant over the coming months.
I would love to, Gary. Yeah, there's a lot more to talk about. So I'm looking forward to revisiting that in a couple of months.
So that brings the show to a close this week. My thanks to Jerrit for joining me and sharing some fascinating insights. This really has been a really good deep dive into what's actually happening on the ground in China. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And don't forget to send us your thoughts and your comments on anything I discussed with Jerrit or anything that we missed out. Drop us a message on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show. And as always, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalog on our website, the seasiatravelshow.com, and you can find us on any international podcast platform. So that's a wrap for today, but I'll be back on Monday with a special edition of the show assessing Southeast Asia's air travel recovery with an expert guest. Look forward to seeing you then.